All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and I'm back with the whole gang here. Dr. Eric Eager, what's going on, my man? Busy week for you. Glad you could join us, though.
Yeah, sorry for the late taping. I mean, we had SportCon in Minneapolis this week, so we got to talk a lot about quarterbacks and give our opinion about the situation the Vikings are currently in. So it was a fun time, sort of showing people in the Minneapolis community sort of what the PFF system can do with quarterbacks.
And to that end, David, I know you listened to the show. I apologize because I know we talked the last time about maybe trying to get someone to sneak in and record Eric talking about quarterbacks. And you had mentioned that you would like to watch that. We did not do that. And so I'm apologizing to you here on the show for not having someone record that. But we'll try to pull some of those awesome quarterback takes out of Eric tonight so that, you won't feel like you were missing out on too much.
If they did, in fact, record it, I will post it on the interwebs. But I don't think I'm not sure if they did or not.
All right. And the man who's been out here fighting off, I think, all of, if not all, maybe 90% of Vikings Twitter, all by his lonesome.
It's Kirk Cousins Twitter now.
Everyone's favorite traveling man from Purple PTSD. What's going on, Luke?
I'm doing well. I'm watching all of these like big national media types experience their first Minnesota winter, and it was 80 degrees in Los Angeles today, so I'm feeling great.
Yeah, apparently it gets cold in the northern portion of the United States of America during the winter.
In January and February.
It's wild stuff. It's wild stuff. I'm glad every media member who visited tweeted at least once or twice to let us know that there is snow in Minnesota.
It's cold and it sucks.
Like, wow, this outdoor stuff is terrible because it's cold. I also like that the Wilfs were like, yeah, they're probably not going to do this cold Super Bowl thing again for a while. Like a long while.
Well, it's all right. We don't have to worry about a home Super Bowl anymore. And then get really disappointed when we don't have
ever
one.
Again.
Yeah. So, how y'all doing with that? You know, everyone, you know, completely over it. Luke, you know, where are you at? How long did it take you before you were able to jump fully back into football things after the disappointment of
I had to jump away from football mostly for like 2 or 3 days. I had to just kind of not think about it. Maybe just on Twitter a little bit just because my phone tells me, but otherwise, like, I was okay after like 2 or 3 days. I recap pods, but I still can't do that. I don't know if I'll ever be able to do that. But I'm pretty much at peace with like what happened and why it happened, and it's time to just look toward the next year.
And Eric, yeah, what about you? Because I don't think we really got fully into this, you know, when we were talking the last time. But I guess on a personal fan level, I guess, how long did it take you to recover? And then I guess with the way that game went, how did that line up with your expectations from a data perspective?
Well, we had Philadelphia against the spread and we had the over. So from the perspective of like being right, quote unquote, it wasn't bad. But, you know, unlike the week before where we sort of stuck our neck out and took the Saints, I told George and others that I was going to refuse to get emotionally and twisted up like I did against the Saints. So we didn't print the Minnesota pick. We printed the New England pick. So I don't know. It's weird. Like, I was trying to explain it to somebody. I think 41 Donut was less of a hurtful game than the one that we had a couple weeks ago, simply because in 41 Donut, the Giants scored on the first drive, and then Mo Williams fumbled the next kickoff return, and then the Giants scored again. So the Vikings didn't run an offensive play until they were down two scores. That game was basically over before it started. Unlike in Philadelphia, the Vikings had basically a brilliant drive downfield, scored a touchdown. Eagles made a couple mistakes on the next offensive drive. Trey Burton like jumped when he shouldn't have. Torrey Smith dropped a deep touchdown pass, basically. And then didn't the Gunner run into Marcus Sherrill? So sort of everything was going right for the Vikings for basically about two thirds of a quarter. And then Keenum, I think that ball would have been picked off whether he was hit or not. But, you know, I I think by the time LeGarrette Blount scored the second touchdown, I was in Michigan for work, and I basically, my friend and I were at a bar. I'm like, all right, I'm going back to my room, because I knew that, you know, we had kind of been negative about Keenum all year, but I knew that kind of when they got down by seven, it was probably not going to work for the Vikings.
Yeah, I think the weirdest part about that game was, I think everything that like any person had brought up as a concern at any point during last offseason all went bad in one game at the worst possible time. Them having to play from behind, you know, Anthony Barr not doing well in coverage, just like everything, the offensive line disintegrating, like everything you can imagine, any worry that you would have had at any point as a Vikings fan, like it all just went bad at one point. But like to the point that you made, like it, because it went so bad so quickly, it was kind of easy to check out emotionally early in the game and kind of start the healing process while the game and the beatdown was still ongoing. And the thing that it looks like Vikings fans have turned their attention to kind of help ease the pain as we look forward is the quarterback position, as always. I mean, it's the thing we love to talk about the most. And as we're looking at options here, like, you know, Alex Smith was at the top of many people's lists, and you know, he's going to be playing for Washington, so he's gone. We take another L on that one there, and now everyone has turned their attention to Luke's favorite quarterback in free agency, Mr. Kirk Cousins. And so, with that, Luke, you put some words on paper about Mr. Cousins, and I want to turn it to you, because a lot of people seem to think that Kirk Cousins is the guy. He is the best option. I actually think I had someone tell me that he was the best quarterback in history to hit free agency.
Oh, wow.
This week. God, and
they're throwing shade at Scott Mitchell so bad. Yeah.
I saw, I forget who
Drew
it was.
Brees.
It was
like, Drew Brees is a free agent.
Peyton Manning.
Madness.
I saw, I forget who it was, but it was one of the like mainstream Minnesota sports media, like Strib people or something, throw out. Oh, it was Meat Sauce. And he threw out that he would be the third best Vikings quarterback after Fran Tarkenton and Brett Favre. And it's like, we had Dante and Cunningham and Warren, like, get out of here.
Yeah. Warren Moon's a Hall of Famer. Brett Favre's a Hall of Famer. Fran Tarkenton's a Hall of Famer. Had all the records when he retired. And Dante Culpepper was like the MVP of the league, if not for Peyton Manning's like historical year one. I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's true. So Luke, talk to me.
So
tell me why everyone is wrong and you are correct about Kirk Cousins.
So yeah, I've talked a lot about Kirk Cousins like on Twitter this week, because a lot of people want to engage, which is awesome. And I wrote an article about him, but I think the biggest thing that people bring up is his total yards. And I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already understand that like total yards is not that indicative of a thing to look at. It's not really a great thing to like hang your hat on when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks for a whole bunch of reasons. But there's two things that I think are deal breakers with me for Cousins. For one, he's been very bad under pressure and consistently. Like we've talked about how like quarterback rating under pressure is super volatile. But over the last 2 years, Kirk Cousins has been like consistently bad when he's been pressured. And the reason I'm using both this year and last year is because like even when he had like Jackson and Garcon and Jordan Reed was healthy-ish, like he was still struggling to make things happen under pressure. And even if you don't believe in rating under pressure as an indication of like how well they play under pressure, because like maybe that rewards checkdowns too much or whatever, like I think the tape corroborates that just like he just has bad pocket presence under pressure. He takes sacks when he doesn't have to. He takes fumbles when he doesn't have to. And he's thrown some pretty baffling picks when under pressure too. So that really bugs me. But a quarterback being bad under pressure has like, it takes a little more than that to like totally unravel a team, because you can game plan around that, right? And we've talked about why like quarterback pressure is maybe less valuable than the league has deemed it to be, like versus, you know, having good pass catchers and good pass coverers. But that's because usually you can game plan around if you're going to give up a bunch of pressure. You can either add more protection or scheme out like quicker passes, which we actually saw Pat Shurmur do a pretty good job of this year when pressure was getting tough, you know, scheme out a bubble screen, scheme out just like a speed out or something like that. But on those throws, those short kind of quick rhythm timing throws, and I'm using the route tree and the heat map from the QB annual as my kind of source for this. Kirk Cousins is like really bad at those things comparative to the rest of the league. And if you compare him on those throws to like every other quarterback we're considering, like Teddy can throw it out. Case Keenum is better at it. Tyrod Taylor is better at it. Sam Bradford is obviously better at it. Like he's like maybe the fifth or sixth best guy we're considering at those throws. So I don't trust him in a situation where we don't have a very good offensive line, which he's benefited from in Washington. And I think if he goes to a place with a good offensive line, I think a lot of these problems become moot. And I actually think things would go pretty well if he had like the Browns offensive line. And that's why I'm kind of rooting for him to end up in Cleveland. But
why would you wish that on anybody? It's like such a bad thing to have happen to you.
I don't know.
It sounds like Luke also has Corey Coleman on a dynasty roster somewhere that he's hoping he's hoping they get a real quarterback over there to help things out.
I'm pretty sure I have Kenny Britt in ours.
Oh.
Hey, he's in the Super Bowl.
I'll edit that out for you. So I guess Eric, you know, Luke set the table for us right there. And I feel like anyone who listens to our show should know that you have done a lot of amazing work with your peers at Pro Football Focus on the QB annual that came out a little while ago there. But I guess as we dig into this, and you know, there are a lot of really great stats on here. Last year doesn't seem to have been Kirk Cousins doesn't show very well if we're looking at last year. I guess looking back further and kind of what you've dug up on Kirk Cousins, I guess what are your thoughts? What are your takes? And I guess would you be happy if the Vikings decided to make him the quarterback of the future and potentially one of the highest paid players in the NFL?
Yeah, so when the Alex Smith story came out, I wrote an article about that because I thought, you know, this was going to be a really interesting thing to talk about in terms of like Mahomes for the Chiefs, Smith for the Washington, and then also what is that like, how do we evaluate Kirk Cousins in this setting? And you know, basically, you know, it was Cousins had, you know, DeSean Jackson leave, he had, you know, Jordan Reed go down, Chris Thompson was one of the best running backs in the league, and then, you know, and then after that, you know, his offensive line went from like the 12th best offensive line in pass protection to the 24th and all of that kind of stuff. And so like, I think my conclusion was, and he ended up, if you look at the PFF quarterback annual, if you go to page 15 or something like that, we have like the clustering algorithm that we've been using for, you know, quarterback efficacy, and Cousins was in cluster 4, which is like kind of a third tier guy. Lower time, you know, lower big time throw, but lower turnover worthy play, lower ADOT, you know, in a cluster with guys like Flacco and Carr and Bortles and Trubisky and Manning and Brissett. And so it's like, you know, that's kind of the issue that I think you have with a guy like Cousins when, you know, Edelman goes down in New England, Brady is still brilliant. You know, Antonio Brown goes down for the Steelers or Le'Veon Bell's suspended at times, and Pittsburgh is still fine. You know, the really good sort of quarterbacks kind of are the ones that are worth what I think Cousins will end up getting paid, for example, are not going to drop all the way down to the third tier of quarterbacks when their situations are perturbed. And I think that's, if you're a Vikings fan, I think you have to be concerned with the fact that, you know, you're going to be paying that level of money to somebody, and you're going to be praying basically that the defense stays good, that Diggs and Thielen are as brilliant as they've been, That the running game is going to rebound with Dalvin Cook. The offensive line is going to stay healthy, all those kinds of things. And I just simply think that a quarterback that requires all of that context is not worth that much money.
Yeah, and that's fair there. And one of the things, and I know, Luke, we were talking about a little bit before we started recording here, one of the concepts that you guys introduced was like NFL throws into the QB annual. And, you know, a lot is made of Kirk Cousins' kind of volume stats. And I think, for better or for worse, it's the world we live in now. Fantasy football drives a lot of the interest in the NFL. And Cousins has been a player who has done well for people from a fantasy perspective because he does put up big volume stats, in part because he's played on a team with no defense and is often in shootouts or playing from behind, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at, you know, the throws that are, you know, the bread and butter, the throws that add the most value from an NFL perspective, how does Kirk Cousins stack up on those throws, Eric?
Yeah, if you look at how he's done at basically, you know, taking away, and for almost every quarterback in the NFL, 40 to 60% of his throws are throws that any quarterback in the NFL can make, or, and they're not valuable, right? So you think about like a wide receiver screen. Almost every quarterback can make that throw, and you know, they're not all that valuable throw to throw. But you know, a deep crossing route on time, you know, on third down and seven or more, you know, not every quarterback can make that throw with consistency, and it's extremely valuable. So you can take
the Jarius Wright throw.
The Jarius Wright throw, exactly, against where, you know, Sam Bradford throws it at the right shoulder of the New Orleans Saints defensive back, and it slides right through there for, yeah, that was a great throw. And so, you know, you look at throws like that, and you can, you know, use a nice, like, machine learning kind of algorithm to actually make the computer pick out which ones are NFL throws. You don't have to do it yourself. And essentially, you know, if you look at the quarterbacks this season, you get this sort of normal suspects. You get the Brady is the best on those types of throws. Ryan is actually second best. And again, this is with PFF grades. So, you know, even if he makes an NFL throw and it's dropped, we still give him credit for it. Garoppolo, Wentz, Wilson, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Rodgers, Breeze, Alex Smith, okay, Goff, Keenum, right? So Keenum somewhere in the top 12-ish, okay? Kirk Cousins is you know, more around the 16 to 17 range. So he's not making those types of throws as much or as effectively. He's kind of in the same realm as the Andy Daltons and the Blake Bortles, the Joe Flaccos, the Tyrod Taylors this year. And again, like, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, if you don't change some like lurking variables, like his receivers are better, his offensive line's better, they have a action may be a little bit more effective, although that's not really that correlated, that you can't get Cousins kind of in that top dozen conversation. It's just saying that he's a ways away from getting the type of money that I think, earning the type of money that I think he's going to probably generate from some team. And so I hope the Vikings aren't that team.
This whole free agent market is filled with like these bear traps, like Cousins. I think if Keenum's agent plays his cards right, Keenum could end up being one of these bear traps too, that like just gets these huge like $130 million contracts, yeah, and like totally don't deserve that much. And I hope that the Vikings are smart enough not to be the ones that fall into those bear traps.
Yeah, I mean, if you look historically at all the quarterbacks that have ever really been free agents, I mean, all the way back to the 80s, right, before free agency was even a thing, like Warren Moon, it was, you know, Warren Moon played in the CFL. Could he, you know, overcome, you know, the racism of the, you know, the time, and, you know, and can he translate from the CFL game to the NFL game? And then by the time free agency was, you know, something in the NFL, you know, there weren't that many really good quarterbacks. So it was guys like Scott Mitchell, guys like Eric Kramer. I'm trying to think of other guys, Steve Berline, you know, those kind of guys were the only guys that got the free agency. And then even into the present time, you're talking about Peyton Manning kind of being a similar case to Moon, where he's an established guy and there were sort of weird circumstances that got him on the open market. And there were certainly question marks about him, right? Could he, you know, come back from his neck injury? Drew Brees, probably the best quarterback, I think, you know, if you take in time into context, the best quarterback to ever hit free agency, he was coming off a torn shoulder in the last game of his San Diego career. So like, you know, any quarterback that hits free agency is going to come with question marks. And I think the question marks with Cousins are not of the like injury variety, and they're not of the, you know, sort of like socioeconomic or social context of the NFL at the time. And so I would take like a real hard pass. I think the same thing with Keenum. Bridgewater, again, this kind of goes back to the whole, he's injured, right? I mean, like, and so his question mark is more about like whether his knee can hold up and make him the player that he was before, because, you know, as we talked, we've been talking about pressure a lot on this. Bridgewater was pressured like 50% of his dropbacks in 2015. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, but the Vikings were very successful that year. And, you know, hopefully if, you know, they put a better system around him and, you know, his knee holds up, you know, that might be a cheaper and better outcome for the Vikings, for example.
I also want to point out that in this whole conversation, we have not, and I think it's a good thing, we haven't mentioned, oh, well, you can get Cousins, but it's going to put too much strain on your cap. Because I don't think that's where this conversation should be. Matt Coller just put out, I think today, a very good article about what the Vikings can afford and how they could, if they really wanted to, go get Cousins and also do all the other stuff they want to do with Barr and Kendricks and maybe get a free agent or whatever. And I think, like, cap-wise, like, that's definitely not what I'm worried about with Cousins. I'm worried about having Cousins be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. That's what I don't want to happen, and it's for actual Kirk Cousins reasons, not necessarily, oh, we can't afford him, let's on, you know, the free agent quarterback, or let's, like, not go all out on this because it's the most important position in sports. And I think a lot of people kind of ascribe that to, I don't want Kirk Cousins. They immediately assume, oh, you don't want him because you just don't want to spend. You're trying to be frugal about it. And it's like, no, I don't want him because I don't think he's the best option for the Vikings. And I don't think he would make the Vikings any better than they were in 2017.
But do you think that at $10 million, like let's reduce it down 100, like let's reduce it down by three, basically. Like what if it's $10 million?
For Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
Then it would feel like, oh, well, then he's the frugal option, because he just feels like a subpar option for us to take at the quarterback position, considering everything else that we likely have available to us.
Because I don't think it's so much that they're not going to have any money left. Like, you know, Like, I can afford Starbucks coffee at $5 a pop. I just don't want it, you know?
It's not worth it.
Right. But I might take it at two, just because it's, you know, it's provides a decent value. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think the number matters, right? And I think that he's too much, regardless of whether you can afford him or not, because all those dollars do matter. And like, I do like what Matthew wrote, and I do like the idea that like don't say this is because the Vikings are being cheap. Say it because they simply don't want him.
They're evaluating Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, but the price tag matters a ton. I think if you have Cousins there at $10 million or whatever, it's not going to happen. But you have Cousins at $10 million, and you have McCown at $10 million or $8 million or whatever, then I'm okay with that. But the problem is when you get Cousins at $30 million, your backup quarterback is gonna be Kyle Slaughter or whatever his name is, or somebody,
yeah, or like some other random whoever,
or a draft pick or whatever. And like it's the money, it's the commitment, and then you fold in the fact that he's not great. Like I would say right now, if you just took averages, you know, Cousins and Bridgewater might be similar, but Bridgewater's money plus his potential, I think, you know, far make him a far better, you know, prospect, independent of what they can afford right.
It shouldn't factor into the decision that like we want to extend Diggs and Anthony Barr. It should factor in the decision that we should probably be paying a quarterback something in the realm of what he's worth, and like we should be cognizant of price efficiency without like saying, oh, we have to extend Diggs, so like let's just not worry about getting a quarterback. No, of course that's like bad strategy, but I think overall what like the point that I will harp on with Kirk Cousins is that I don't think he makes the Vikings better. And I think there are better options out there at quarterback. Yeah. And then whatever the money ends up being is what it ends up being.
Because if they feel – if the Vikings can still afford Barr and Kendricks and Diggs, but there is a – there is a field stretching tight end that they could bring in the mix, or they want to re-sign Jerick McKinnon because, you know, they see him as a valuable player, Sheldon as a return Richardson. Specialist and a third down running back or something like that. You know, they could, they just have more flexibility there. And I don't know. We're also all Teddy files, right? Like, you know,
we're
card carrying members, but I don't know. You know, Bridgewater is just going to be more, you know, less expensive, and so they're going to also be able to, with a straight face, sign or draft another player who's also a viable option in the case that he doesn't work out. Whereas I think with Cousins, you're basically just like Washington is with Alex Smith, right? I mean, you're basically saying we're going to die on this hill, you know, and that's not exactly the way I want to go out.
So can you gentlemen give me some perspective here? Because I was yelled at on Twitter.com earlier today. It was a horrifying experience. I was told that I'm obsessed with one Tyrod Taylor. And I know, Eric, in previous recordings, you've said that Tyrod might be one of those players that in your system, maybe he's overvalued a bit. But when I look at the quarterback options that are bandied about for our favorite football team, like we'll say Alex Smith, you know, passer rating, again, not the greatest thing ever. Tyrod was better for their career. Obviously, Tyrod is a smaller sample. When you're looking at things like adjusted net yards per attempt, like Tyrod looks pretty good there when you know, stack him up against, you know, Alex Smith and the Case Keenums and, you know, Teddy Bridgewaters, et cetera. Buffalo obviously doesn't like him very much. I mean, they benched him during a playoff run. And it seems like he might be an option that would be inexpensive. He's shown that he can perform when things aren't great around him. I mean, Buffalo got rid of all of his weapons and replaced him with Kelvin Benjamin and a hurt Jordan Matthews. What would your thoughts be on you know, the Vikings maybe value shopping and bringing someone like a Tyrod Taylor in based on, I guess, what the numbers show you from Pro Football Focus?
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because I've said, you know, I think Andy asked me this on his show, who's one player that Pro Football Focus has graded highly and you don't? And I think Taylor was the name I came up with because he's always graded well in our system because he's not going to do things that give him negative grades. You know, he doesn't throw interceptions. He doesn't make a ton of turnover-worthy plays. And Kevin Cole talks about that. And Kevin Cole's a really sharp guy. He says, you know, running the football gives you a floor of quarterback play because you're going to pick up a first down or two, even when you're not playing well, you know, mentally, I guess, or like as a passer, right? Like it's kind of like a basketball player who's good at defense and rebounding. Like every night you're going to get some value from that player, even if he's not shooting well, because he just does things that don't require that fineness, right? Tyrod Taylor runs the ball well, and I think like that provides you a floor. And Teddy even did the same thing when he was quarterback of the Vikings before his injury. So I think he adds those kinds of things in terms of, like, you know, how he does on NFL throws. And again, this is where there's a ton of lurking variables here, but he simply was not asked to or could not make NFL throws at a level better than guys like Cousins and Dalton. He was sort of in that group there. You know, he was asked to do a lot of things that were sort of more safe and allowing the folks around him to make plays. And, you know, you saw that kind of in the playoff game. There was like a fundamental ceiling that Tyrod had in that game against Jacksonville. And Jacksonville is a suffocating defense, so there's something there. But so I don't know. I think it depends upon his price. I mean, if Taylor's going to ask for something like $10 to $15 million a year, then I would consider it if it was – tailored to a better option next to him. So whether that be a guy like Josh McCown or a guy like, you know, Bridgewater, you know, I'm trying to think of other names out there. You know, maybe even, I don't know, at some point this ship is going to sail on guys like Gabbert and stuff like that. But like another guy that's like a legitimately, you know, viable option if Taylor falters. But I think again, it's all about price. I think he's a passable player, and especially if the Vikings defense stays good, then they should consider him.
If you're going to spend, say, $27 million on the quarterback position next year, and then I don't know what you do for future years, whatever the contract ends up happening, but whatever. But if you split that $27 million between Tyrod Taylor at, say, 17 and Teddy Bridgewater at, say, 10, I feel like that is a much better option for the Minnesota Vikings than giving all 27 of it to Kirk Cousins.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, I feel like you need to call Rick right now.
Hire me, Vikings.
Yeah, hit him up, give him a shout, let him know that's what we're doing, and we can go ahead and stop arguing about these things on Twitter. But Eric, one of the things that, you know, as it relates, you know, obviously the quarterback position, I'm sure it has a lot to do with that, but you know, the Vikings are kind of an outlier already in terms of, you know, the defense being as good as it has been for as long as it has been. I mean, it's, you know, even getting better, you know, this past season versus the previous couple. I guess, what are your thoughts about kind of the outlook in terms of the stability of, you know, the performance of the defense and offense as we move forward based on kind of the research and things that you've looked at?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, so you bring up some great things, right? So if you look at, you know, what is stable in the NFL, we did the numbers and we were looking at PFF grades. I think you could do it for yards per play allowed or yards generated, you know, per play. But offense is more stable than defense. So, and if you look specifically, grades at the quarterback position are, you know, correlated at a rate of like 0.5, 0.6 every year. And grades for total defense are correlated at a rate of something like 0.4. So you're talking about a lot more stability at the quarterback position, which is why, you know, I think, and I think we've learned from it as a football public, but also, you know, we've seen it very, very acutely with the Vikings. Defense, especially top tier defense, is not something to run to the bank with. You have, you know, 2015 Vikings won with kind of average to below average offense, a running game, and then pretty, you know, top five-ish defense. 2016, you know, the quarterback got hurt, but I think that they had passable offense to some degree. But the reason that they did not make the playoffs in 2016 was because their defense took a small step back because of injuries, right? Then the next season, their quarterback play, I would assume that we would all agree that, you know, we'd rather have Bradford than Keenum probably, but their defense takes a step up. So you see like the fluctuations in the Vikings defense fundamentally causing kind of their ability to go from 11-5 to 8-8 to 13-3. You know, and so what has to be the thing that's sort of your rock? What is the thing that keeps teams in the playoff hunt on a consistent basis, and it's quarterback play? And so, you know, teams like Minnesota, 12-1 to win the Super Bowl next year. You all three of us are Vikings fans, but I'm not betting that because I think that that's inflated by how good their defense is. A team like Jacksonville is 27-1. I'd have to run the numbers, but I would even think that that's a bit. Oh, wow. San Francisco's 25-1. Jeez. Okay. But say Jacksonville's 27-1. I still think that idea is inflated by their defense, right? If they do nothing about the quarterback position, you could see like a cluster of injuries. So you look at like, let's say Telvin Smith and AJ Boye got hurt. Now their margin is pretty thin, you know, and they could fall down to 8-8 or 9-7 relatively quickly in a league with only 16 games. You look at teams whose defense played poorly one year because of injuries. So like Denver, right? Denver was on the other side of this coin in 2015, winning the Super Bowl with a, you know, poor quarterback play, but elite defense. 2 years later, they're a, you know, they're picking in the top 10. The New York Giants in 2016 made the playoffs at 11-5 with really good defense and poor quarterback play. They're picking in the top five this season. Because defense simply is not, you know, cluster injuries affect defense so much, whereas things like injuries to guys like Julian Edelman, injuries to guys like even Jason Peters, like the Philadelphia Eagles were fine, you know, their quarterback, Carson Wentz was going to overcome that injury. You know, the Steelers had injuries to Antonio Brown, they had suspensions to Le'Veon Bell at times, and they were still fine. So, like, I think when you're sort of projecting forward, teams teams like Minnesota, even though they have fantastic defenses and we have big, you know, hot, substantial amounts of pride in their defense. We love seeing it. Ultimately, we have to know that, you know, the quarterback play is really the stable thing. And so what they should be thinking about doing is trying to get a quarterback that can, you know, sort of be their rock and just, you know, as it happens, have a good defense also.
I feel like there's a threshold of play in a given game that, like, your quarterback has to play a certain amount of well to, like, win most games, like, play at a certain quality to win most games. I think maybe a defense can move that line, but a defense can't move that line so much as to make it so that, like, Blake Bortles can take you to a Super Bowl. And Blake Bortles, I thought, like, if Blake Bortles played like the Blake Bortles we know, I don't think they beat Pittsburgh. Like, he played well in that game. And the defense actually made it harder on Bortles than they needed to. But, like, the defense in some games can do, like, what Jacksonville did against Buffalo. We're like, okay, you just need to beat 3 points and you win this game. But over the course of a season, you're not going to get that many games like that. And I feel like the quarterback needs to cross that line in enough games to win. And while the defense can move where that line is, they can't move it past a bad quarterback consistently enough to, like, make you a constant playoff contender like the Patriots are, or, like, I guess Atlanta is one of those now, or like the Packers when they have Rodgers.
Well, and we saw in the Vikings game, right? Like, they hung their hat on defense and their defense let them down. And as much as we want, you know, to put some of the blame on Keenum, it wasn't Keenum's job to score 39 points in that game, right? It was the defense's job to hold Philadelphia under 20 or whatever, to keep them in that game. And so, like, even, you know, you're just simply – it's far easier for a guy like Doug Peterson to scheme his offense to beat a good defense than for a team like Minnesota, you know, for a team like Jacksonville to, you know, have their defense rise up to the challenge of Tom Brady and the Patriots. You know, it's that, and that's why we see sort of some of these asymmetries and, like, the fact that the same quarterbacks make the AFC Championship game / the Super Bowl at, you know, seemingly every year in the AFC, at least, and in the NFC, you know, we see some of the same characters on a consistent basis as well.
I also think with defense, like, Doug Peterson hard countered the Vikings. He was able to set up situations where it didn't matter that the Vikings had good players. Like, he was able to set up Harrison Smith in a situation where, I don't care how good you are, you're going to bite on that tight end, on like that big long Ertz catch. Mm-hmm. Every safety in the league bites on that because they were coached to be aggressive against Foles, and then Doug Peterson, like, made him pay. Or there was a really good counter toss play that had left Everson Griffin swinging. And, like, I don't care how good of a defensive end you are, it doesn't matter that you're good because of the way that play was designed. So, like, that can happen to defenses. You can kind of game plan in a way that renders the defense irrelevant. And it only takes one instance of that to eliminate you in a format, in a single elimination format playoffs like football has. But with quarterbacks, I feel like they're a lot harder to, like, hard. Like, you can't just, like, hard counter Aaron Rodgers. Like, maybe you can have him have a bad game or something like that, but there's not, like, something with Aaron Rodgers. I don't even believe in, like, ooh, get interior pressure. That's how you beat Tom Brady. Because he's, like, the best quarterback we've ever seen under pressure. Like, you have to outdo him, outduel a guy like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. Whereas with a good defense, and we actually saw it happen to Jacksonville a couple times too, you can find X's and O's ways to, like, knock them off and make them not matter. I feel like it's way harder to do that with the quarterback, and I feel like that's why it manifests itself in the way that you described.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this kind of leads to one final thing, and we don't want to go too deep in this. Maybe it'll be something we talk about in another episode. But you know, obviously, you know, I've talked to you guys off air about this. Was, you know, playing around with the information that PFF has on a game by game basis, and then looking at, you know, the correlation with points. And I guess this kind of ties back because I was shocked, and I'm, you know, I want your opinions now. So something we can kind of talk about here. I was shocked at how lowly rated kind of defensive line play was in terms of its correlation to points. And I really have nothing else. I need that. That kind of flies in direct opposition to everything I've ever been told about football as a Vikings fan watching, you know, the Eagles run roughshod over us with their defensive line. It seems as though the D line kind of took over that game. I guess, Eric, you said this aligns with some stuff that you've seen as well. I guess help me understand why the low correlation between, you know, the interior line and defensive ends when it comes to the points from a defense.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Because you see, like, if I was doing a study on defensive linemen and what different grades meant for them, and pass rushing grades are super stable player wise, but the expected points generated by a positive grade as a pass rusher are far lower than what you get for a positive grade as a pass defender. And I think it's just, to me, so I ran the same numbers as you and I was super surprised. And so the way that I tried to sort of spin it was, you know, you're still relatively far away from the conclusion of a play, and the conclusion of a football play matters more than the conclusion of any other play in any other sport because of the sample, right? Like 16 games, 70 offensive snaps per team, all that kind of thing. Like, if you beat the left guard for a pressure, the quarterback is going to get the ball out a fair amount of those times. You know, if you whiff on, you know, a backside block in the run game, most of the time, you know, that defender's not going to come in and clean up that run. Or if he does, well, running sucks anyway, so it wasn't that big of a deal. So we do see this thing where, like, you know, guys that cover the pass, guys that throw passes, guys that catch passes are, you know, immensely more valuable on a grade for grade play to play game than guys in the interior. That's what flies in the face of anything we've ever thought. And I think it's because we've gotten so much better off, you know, offensive have gotten so much better at controlling the pace, controlling how pressure affects them. And so it's really only these, like, super edge cases that truly affect broad swaths of games. And, you know, whereas pass coverage, we've seen, you know, pass coverage can basically, you know, take you almost an entire season at being an elite defense, as we saw with Denver. And they did have one pass rusher, but their pass coverage was there too. And we've also seen pass coverage completely, you know, as Vikings fans, we saw in 2013, Jared Allen was amazing. Everson Griffin was very good. Brian Robinson, very good. And they couldn't cover a $5 check, and their defense was the worst in the league. So, you know, and then we've also seen offenses with basically average offensive lines do extremely well. So I think that that's kind of where it is. It's like, you know, basically where does the conclusion of the play happen, and you know, who has an effect on that? And it's mostly, you know, guys at the, you know, on the throwing end and the catching end and the coverage end.
I do have, I feel like that highlights a really important, like the importance of having a quarterback who can accomplish that, and like a passing game that can, like, still function under pressure. Because I feel like, while, like, in the overall sample of the NFL, like, it matters sometimes and it doesn't matter sometimes, but I feel like you really want to be the ones that don't matter. Like, I was just looking at just passer rating under pressure, and at the bottom of that list, you see, like, DeShone Kizer and Brett Hundley and Joe Flacco and Mitch Trubisky and, like, all these quarterbacks that kind of have been largely seen as holding their team back. So, like, if you're a team and you're trying to say, okay, I want the most ferocious pass rush in the world, like, that's only going to matter for some of the games. It's not going to matter for every game. But if you have a quarterback who can always negate a good pass rush, like a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, that's going to matter every game, that, like, especially if you can't protect your quarterback. So, like, I feel like that doesn't mean just, like, totally abandon, or not, like, totally abandon, obviously, but, like, that doesn't mean that the trench game in the passing game is completely rendered irrelevant. It means you want to be the kind of team that can successfully render it irrelevant, and you just want to be one of those times where the pass rush doesn't matter. Because I feel like it still can when you're a quarterback like, say, I don't know, Kirk Cousins, who dissolves and throws a bunch of picks under pressure. Like, you don't want to be on the wrong side of that market inefficiency.
Or you're a quarterback who's not accurate in the short game, or your quarterback that's, or you, or your offense doesn't have receivers that scare a defense, so you can't get, like, so for the Vikings, like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen can have 5-yard hitches all day because the other team is so afraid of them. And we frankly saw that. It's not that Keenum was such an efficient quarterback. It's that, you know, he drops back and throws a rhythm pass, and those guys are getting such a cushion that they're wide open and there's free 5 yards all the time, you know? And so you can stay kind of ahead of the chains that way. Or you have backs out of the backfield that are effective, or you have, you know, something like a running game that can kind of, you know, give you successful yards on first down, like all of those different things. But it is a surprising result, Jason. I, you know, it was one of those things that I was really surprised by, because we see all these edge case games where offensive line play can clearly decimate a team. But I think over the broad collection of games, that there are other things that matter more.
Well, thank you. That does put it in a bit of context that I think does actually make quite a bit of sense. And Luke, I like very much how you were able to pull that all the way back to the beginning and bring us back to a little bit of Kirk Cousins hate there while we were talking about that. So that was very well done.
I've got plenty of Kirk Cousins hate to go.
Well, we've covered a lot, and I think we've touched on all the subjects that we kind of agreed we were going to talk about before the show went on tonight. So I guess we'll wrap it up here with Eric. What are you working on? Where can people find you either writing or talking about the football? Now that, you know, your podcast is appropriately labeled on places where people can find podcasts. What you working on these days, buddy?
Did we lose Eric?
I feel like we have a frozen Eric again.
I'll go.
So Luke, you go. What are you working on? Outside of telling us that Kirk Cousins is a bad idea.
So now that the offseason is on, I probably won't be writing weekly. I'll probably just like write when the mood strikes me or when there's like, and that's going to go the same for the Purple Journal. I think we're going back to every other week, or maybe every third week or something. That hasn't quite been decided yet. But you can still check out my Kirk Cousins is a Bad Idea article for a much more thorough explanation of the stuff I talked about tonight. I might write about Tyrod Taylor because I'm super intrigued by that idea of picking him up if we're going to pick up a free agent, but I haven't done quite have that strong of an opinion yet. So I'd be very interested to look at that. So maybe I'll write about that. Maybe I'll write about the new OC whenever we decide to hire that. I'm not quite sure. But otherwise, you can check me out on the Purple Journal, and you can check out VikingsTerritory.com. Just got a little makeover, so you can go over there and check out some cool draft content that Climbing the Pocket's own JR will be doing over there.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I think we have him back in location number 3. On this podcast today, as he chases the internet through his home. Eric, what are you working on that people might be interested in? And where can they find you writing and talking about the football?
Yeah, sorry, guys. With Randy Moss making the Hall of Fame today, I had to, in his memory, leave the game early. Okay. So, sorry. Yeah,
that was a PFF forecast joke right there.
Yeah,
that is brand. That is on brand.
Yeah. So, in addition to this podcast, I record the Pro Football Forecast every single week. Generally, that comes out about Wednesday or Thursday. So that's been, you know, a lot of fun. So if you want to listen, then I'm doing my sort of proprietary special teams rankings. That'll be out Tuesday, I think, or Wednesday, and then. This weekend, I'll be in Cincinnati to visit the PFF offices, and in that time, we'll have some articles out. One of them will be on basically, what we're planning on doing in our analytics group for the upcoming offseason. So I'm really excited, it's going to be a fun time. Busy as usual, but glad to be working on football in such an exciting time for the Vikings and the NFL.
Well, awesome. As always, gentlemen, Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come record with me. Listeners, thank you for listening to us spout things off about the sport that we all love probably a bit too much. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good one.